Welcome, y'all, to the Direct Examination Podcast. My name is Amber Fulmer.
And I'm Joseph Bias. Thank you so much for joining us for South Carolina's number one legal podcast. We certainly appreciate your clicks, your downloads, your emails, your follows, everything that you do for us. We appreciate it. Again, if you haven't heard some of our other episodes, if this happens to be your first, go back, listen to our other episodes. We certainly appreciate it. And of course, while you're there, go ahead, wherever you get this episode from, whether it be Apple, Spotify, Amazon, give us a 5-star review, write us a review. We certainly appreciate it because we're lawyers. We're vain. We like to hear that we're doing a good job. Amber, how are you?
I'm good. Was a little under the weather today, but otherwise fine. Baby just went to sleep. So if y'all hear me, you know, run off the microphone real quick, it's just to tend to her, but Dada has baby monitor right now, so we should be good.
Nice. Well, you know, we're missing our third co-host today. We're going to leave the why a mystery for now, but we wish him well, and we hope to have good news next time we come back on the show. Right, Amber?
Yes, and I just checked my messages to see if I had an update from him while we were on here.
And before we get to our illustrious guest, we did something really silly last year called the Golden Gavels. It was basically our end of the year awards. We will have that again this year. So if you're listening to this, you can go back and listen to our old Golden Gavel episode from December of 2019. Apparently, nothing really important or interesting happened in 2020. I'm reading the news, but we're going to try to have an episode anyway. So if you have ideas for awards,
too soon, Joseph.
I know, right? but if you have a example of awards we can give out, whether it be serious, funny, or anything else, email us at directexaminationpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear it, and we'd love to give out some awards. So, speaking of awards, we have an award-winning guest this evening, nothing but illustrious guest for us, and we happen to have a special one. Amber, why don't you tell us about it?
Our guest today is the legal director of the Greenville Medical Legal Partnerships at the South Carolina Legal Services, the statewide legal aid office. His name is Kirby Mitchell, and Kirby represents low-income clients in a wide variety of civil cases in South Carolina's state and federal courts, including the family, probate, circuit, appellate, and magistrate courts, as well as in administrative proceedings and in the United States Tax Court. The South Carolina Bar Foundation and the South Carolina Access to Justice Commission honored Kirby as their Legal Services Lawyer of the Year in 2013, and South Carolina Lawyers Weekly has named Kirby as its Leadership in Law Award honoree in 2015. He received a Bachelor of Arts in Economics in 1990 from Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina, and he received his Juris Doctorate degree in 1996 from the School of Law at the University of Georgia. And we please help us welcome Kirby Mitchell to the program.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate you having me.
Kirby, we're going to talk today about medical legal partnerships. Before we had you on, I'll confess that I was ignorant about them. So I want you to kind of walk us through, first, what is a medical legal partnership and how did you get involved with the one in Greenville specifically?
Great. Yeah, Joseph, let me tell you a little about why, and then I'll tell you exactly what it is. The what is it is best answered just by an MLP, a partnership, is a legal aid office embedded in a safety net hospital. You realize in healthcare that only about 20% of someone's health is determined by the type of healthcare they get, or the medical care. Another 20% is genetics. And that leaves the majority of your health primarily being a function of determined by a wide range of social determinants. So all kinds of things, the zip code you have, the food you eat, the environment around you, this is what really determines your health. So legal aid lawyers, street lawyers like me, turns out we're really useful in settings like public hospitals where all kinds of social problems end up. And the triage there, you know, things that present as medical problems, turns out a really high percentage can be successfully addressed, or at least addressed in part, by a legal aid lawyer. So that's kind of the why, and why this approach developed in the United States. The first MLP, the first medical legal partnership, started in Boston in 1993. And since then, we've seen a pretty huge explosion of these medical legal partnerships around the country. So I'm thrilled to be part of the one in Greenville.
And we were talking before we started recording, there's actually two in South Carolina?
That's right. There's an excellent medical legal partnership in Columbia called CHAMPS. It's run by Professor Emily Suskey, run like a law school clinic, and it's based there at the law school. They started about a year after we did. We started in fall of 2016 in Greenville, and CHAMPS started a little bit after that, right there at the law school in Columbia.
Okay, so that's the two in South Carolina. On a national scale, how many are there?
Yeah, and I should mention as well, there's in Charleston, there's a wonderful group trying to get one going with MUSC and a palliative care focus, which I can talk about in a minute.
That would be nice.
Yeah, but across the country, there's now about 370 of these. When I first heard of this approach, you know, there were, I think, about 300 in about 40 different states. So South Carolina in 2016 became the 41st state to have one. And now we see 49 states and the District of Columbia. Only South Dakota remains MLP free. So it's really kind of...
not looking good for them right now.
Well, we'll see. It's been a fantastic evolution, though, and great development for getting what had been really siloed professions, medical care mm-hmm. and justice community, to actually work together directly on really the same population. And I like to let the doctors I work with call me a tool in their toolkit. I let them call me a tool because it's amazing to them to do that. And listen, they have a tremendous amount of resources and procedures and medications and examinations they can bring to bear on a medical problem. But to have a street lawyer, someone who can go outside the hospital and address things like mold issues and how, or appeal, you know, wrongfully denied Medicaid coverage, or address bed bugs, just things that are really causing serious health problems across South Carolina, it's a fantastic tool for them. So that's how we get the partnership going.
So when you say you're embedded in a healthcare facility, and you kind of mentioned it with your answer right there, that means you're going, you have these relationships with these doctors and these healthcare facilities. So practically, how does that work? Do they call you up and they say, hey, we think we may have something that you could help out with? Or is it up to the patient? Can you kind of walk us through a little bit how that process goes, how you get involved with these cases?
Sure. Our medical legal partnership has an office right in our healthcare provider's facility. Prisma Health is the medical provider we partner with in the upstate. So I have a valued Prisma Health badge, and I'm able to walk the halls and meet directly with the actual clinicians. So nurse practitioners and social workers and nursing staff and physicians, of course, that's who I'm meeting with regularly and working with as a team. They identify what we call health-harming civil legal needs. You know, that takes some training. It's kind of help the clinicians see the type of cases we do at Legal Aid. We work together to identify things like, you know, a utility shutoff or food insecurity, domestic violence. All these things have both a legal and medical component. Once those are identified, one way that we're embedded is electronically. They can refer in a drop-down box through Epic, the electronic medical record software that Prisma Health uses, you know, directly to me, the same way they would you know, refer you to a specialist if you needed to see another physician or something, you know, requiring a referral outside of that physician's expertise. When they identify some sort of health harming civil legal need, when they hear a mother say, oh, you know, thanks for addressing my son's ear infection, but I don't know how I'm going to pay rent, or we might be homeless next month. And, you know, also I've got the Medicaid denied. The physician or the nurse practitioner or whoever the clinician is can immediately get that case to us to be assessed and decide if that is something for the medical legal partnership to address.
Now, Kirby, you mentioned the hopefully the partnership with MUSC in the area of palliative care. What all would that entail? What is that something that we could expect sometime soon, or is that just something that y'all are hoping to expand with within the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the beautiful thing about medical legal partnerships across the country, it's just an approach. It's not a one-size-fits-all model. We started, for example, in Greenville in behavioral pediatrics. That was the first doctor that I danced with, and that was her area of expertise. So it was a lot of referrals, for example, of children with developmental delays, autism. And so a lot of the cases were things that were super helpful to those families, IEP hearings in schools, guardianships, once the child then turned 18, all kinds of issues related to that. They also focus with pediatrics. But yeah, in Charleston, my understanding is MUSC had a medical champion, a physician who was really excited about this, who was an expert in palliative care. And you can just think about all the legal issues that arise when it's nearing the end of life. So all kinds of issues of advance directives and consent and taking care of children and for what's next after someone passes away, you know, that's a wonderful another area of focus. Listen, if you look at, for example, the National Center's website of medical legal partnerships across the country, it's an amazing diversity of things. You know, many focus on pediatrics and geriatrics like we do now in the upstate, but there's remarkable diversity. Some focus on a specific condition, not a department of a hospital. So, for example, sickle cell patients or asthma patients. Turns out they have a huge need for the type of skills that legal aid lawyers have. And some focus on a discrete and specific population, like HIV positive or AIDS patients, or, for example, veterans have a remarkable amount of need for lawyers to address their health problems. So, yeah, we'll see what develops in Charleston. It's exciting to have these different experiments and really with totally different healthcare and education partners. In Greenville, we partner with Furman University as our educational partner. In Columbia, obviously, it's the law school that's the primary partner. But yeah, in who knows? You could see maybe the law school there or the medical school across the country. Sometimes it's nursing schools or social work schools. So if you'd like to see diversity in these things, MLPs are for you. So,
it sounds wonderful. Could you foresee with the ongoing pandemic and the issues that may arise once some of those social needs in some of these larger cities, as we've seen with housing, with palliative care, all of that, can you foresee kind of another subset of that arising out of the pandemic, that we may need these types of aids, maybe more, as you said, health diagnosis specific kind of thing?
I think so. You know, the pandemic still has unclear consequences in a lot of ways, and particularly in healthcare. But two things we've noticed: this move towards more telehealth appointments and sort of seeing your doctor the way I'm seeing Joseph right now on a Zoom call instead of in person. Some physicians have told me, to their surprise, it's been extremely helpful with certain patient populations. For example, they're now seeing an autistic 15-year-old in his home environment instead of what, where they normally would see him at the hospital. And they can see how he, you know, maybe reacts to other family members, or they see certain risks in the house, or all kinds of things that were never possible before telehealth appointments. Also, though, I think what's been clear is the massive disparity in access to healthcare that this pandemic yes. has made it crystal clear to everyone. I don't think that was news to people at the hospital or that worked at legal aid, you know, before March 2020. But now, certainly, I think all of our society is very aware of rural populations being left behind, vulnerable populations behind in any sort of access to healthcare. So, yeah, I think what the medical legal partnership does is proving to be remarkably valuable and resilient during this pandemic.
Kirby, you mentioned something I thought was interesting, that not only is this a partnership between the hospital and legal services, but there's an educational component with it as well. And, you know, you're obviously an alum of Furman. I'm an alum of Wofford, and I'm actually really jealous that Wofford isn't involved with something like this. can you talk a little bit about what the students get from this partnership, how they kind of play into it, and what essentially your training is and what you're training them to do?
Absolutely. Yeah. Our primary focus at our medical legal partnership in Greenville, number one mission is patient health. You know, I'm there to use my legal skills to improve the health of a patient. But as a secondary mission, we want to educate the future doctors and lawyers and healthcare professionals in South Carolina to think differently about their professions. You know, doctors and lawyers should be working hand in hand to help people in a much more effective way than has been practiced in the past. And listen, a lot of low-income people never see a doctor now. The way medicine is practiced, mm-hmm. it's common that they only see their nurse practitioner or a different type of professional that has just evolved and developed over the last 15, 20 years. This can be a good thing. And so we would love to partner with, for example, Clemson Nursing School. I've presented there a couple times, as well as at the medical school. Joseph, I would happily go to Wofford. You've got a lot of future lawyers that are terriers, of course. And we would just love to see 15, 20 years from now, things that none of us have even thought of, much like the medical legal partnerships didn't exist 20 years ago. We need to see something that'll be effective for the healthcare and justice needs of people in the future developed now. So we love to get with the students. I teach a class at Furman every May, the Maymester. We teach in their master's program, community health master's students, and we're starting to dabble with the USC School of Social Work, trying to get these professions that, listen, we all expect them to work together, but we never educate them together. Isn't that kind of weird that, you know, your 3 years of law school never once are taught or interact with a paralegal student? And then once you get out into the real world, of course, that's who you expect to basically do your job. And it's very similar for doctors. You know, they never interact with medical students, don't really interact with nursing students or social work students. So I would just love to see that change. Joseph, we should get Furman students and Wofford students to do more than just tailgate before football games. Although there's nothing wrong with that, and I will continue to do that.
As somebody who, I'll say this first. One, you don't know this, I'm actually married to a doctor. And one of the conversations that we've had multiple times is just how ignorant we are of what the other one does. And so you would think, in like kind of like you said, in 4 years of medical school and all the rotations and in 3 years of law school and, you know, going on to profession, there would be some conversation, if nothing else, then, you know, medicine for law students to learn how to read a medical record. But in the same way where if she gets a subpoena at her job, you know, she's freaked out because she has no idea what it, she's only heard it on TV. So
sure.
That partnership, even if nothing else than putting the same people in a room, is way overdue because, my goodness, you're right. We could be helping each other so much more, especially when it comes to these critical things. Now, I don't know if blend the Ferb and Wofford thing. I think doctors and lawyers may go first.
I might have overreached there a little bit. A man can dream, but listen, I got to give a little plug to Furman as well. You know, a medical legal partnership, you need doctors, you need lawyers, but not just the Furman students, but the faculty at Furman and their Institute for the Advancement of Community Health, one of their sort of outward facing institutes. They do all of our assessment and evaluation work and, you know, kind of showing the return on investment this approach delivers and sort of the better metrics to use. You know, you shouldn't judge a lawyer by their billable hours or their case totals necessarily. And like I've already said, the goal is to improve patient health. So, you know, we're trying to show sort of an upstream and effective method of helping low-income people in a way that doesn't just react to the problem, but it gets outside the four walls of the hospital and can even prevent some of these problems. You know, I've been able to intervene with an asthma patient or a patient with sickle cell or some condition where they couldn't breathe well and deal with the landlord, where we can show months later that child goes to the ER less, that child requires less medication, that child is having a to the health system, missing less school, you know, the parent is missing work. So those are really the metrics we would love to see the MLPs judged by, because we think we can prove really long-term effective return on investment that way.
Do you see other areas doing MLPs better than or some others? And do you find yourself learning from some of these other MLPs that aren't necessarily in South Carolina?
Yeah, we've had wonderful mentors across the border in North Carolina. They have a much more extensive network of medical legal partnerships that have been around much longer. And also just our neighbor in Atlanta, Georgia, they've had an award-winning medical legal partnership for about 18 years, I think, that is based at Georgia State Law School, but it has medical partners that you might think of as competitors. It has Morehouse School of Medicine and Emory School of Medicine. Mm. And, so fantastic. You know, organizations that typically compete with one another, often in a medical legal partnership, will see mutual benefit to cooperating. So yeah, we've looked to just our neighbors here in the Southeast and gotten some really good mentoring to get us going here in South Carolina.
Mm, great.
Kirby, what was it that made you specifically want to get involved? Because my understanding, you were already at Legal Services. We've been a huge fan of Legal Services on this pod. We've had Susan Eagles and Jennifer Rainville, and we had Sue Berkowitz from Appleseed
as
well. Dane routinely calls you guys heroes. It seems that you went from, you know, the legal services in general to this specific area. And I was wondering what kind of called you to that, to this particular area of the law and these particular partnerships.
It's a great question. For me, I was very happy being a legal aid lawyer and addressing one case at a time, and I enjoy the variety of litigation we see, and had started to have some good success and some impact cases and things that resulted in, for example, a statewide injunction or appellate cases that changed the law in South Carolina a little bit. So it was just the realization with really some of my colleagues. I got to mention Kameka Nichols Graham, who was a fantastic legal aid lawyer and is now a family court judge here in South Carolina. You know, she was kind of a model to me in that she saw that low-income people, really, their only chance at upward mobility required strong education. And so she focused her whole legal career before going on the family court bench into making sure low-income people had access to education, were treated fairly in school discipline cases, and really kind of pioneered the area of education law. And I thought, well, you know, the other area that is so critical to low-income people, health. If you don't have some access as a person to a decent education and decent health care, you really are kind of doomed. And those really should be accessible, and we like to think they're accessible to everyone. So I guess I just sort of came to realize how valuable my skill set as a trial lawyer in Greenville, someone who pretty to the judges in Greenville just from years of litigation, that I could really improve health for individuals. You know, if I get involved with a cystic fibrosis patient who's 2 years old and living in a mold infested apartment, that child will have less, you know, lung scarring because of that. You know, you can have that impact on someone's health, just as an example. So yeah, for me, that I came to see what I do through that lens, sort of reframing legal aid work as a tool for healthcare professionals. And it's a wonderful thing to, you know, the access, limited as it may be in some cases, but to folks with disabilities and particularly minors, it's really remarkable. And I'd love to see that preserved. And I think health equity is something that legal aid almost didn't realize how valuable we could be in that, trying to seek that ideal of health equity for everyone in South Carolina.
Are there any fields that, you know, let's say Kirby Mitchell wins the lottery, and after he goes on his worldwide trip, he comes back and says, if I want to improve medical legal partnerships in South Carolina or even in the upstate, where would you be targeting? What are areas of needs that you believe, you know, are that we can achieve in the state?
Well, I would love to win the lottery, but I don't play, so it seems unlikely. We've had success in pediatrics. You know, when I first got started in 2016, I thought, oh, I need, you know, kind of like flashy, you know, gimmicky things like let's do veterans or let's do domestic violence victims, kind of discreet, small, you know, let's do moms with gestational diabetes. You know, that's a population that really costs the hospital a lot of money. And I was advised, you know what, you're going to want to do something scalable. Focus on kids and old people. We got a lot of those. Okay. With that advice, you know, we, like I told you, we started in behavioral pediatrics. We had success. We expanded in 2017 to pediatrics, helped a lot of kids. We got a big grant in 2018 to expand to geriatrics. We kind of matched Prism Health where its departments were at and kind of took that focus. We've had a lot of success there. Our next step in December, we're presenting and having a grand rounds with the psychiatry department, both the adult and pediatric psychiatry. We think that particular population would really benefit from what we do at Legal, the cases we handle. But yeah, if I were to somehow win the lottery, I do want to go back to the original. So I'll buy a ticket. And original idea, I think veterans, an MLP focused on veterans would really work. And the reason may be unique to Greenville, although there are several successful veterans MLPs in the country. Judge Chuck Simmons has had a remarkable success with his drug court and veterans in Greenville. And so, you know, I've been fortunate. I was the Greenville Bar president in 2019. I really got to see kind of what some of the remarkable successes in Greenville are just from local efforts. With judges and with pro bono work. And I think we could have a really successful impact with an MLP approach to those sort of diversionary courts like that. Because, listen, those are criminal cases. I don't handle any criminal law. I'm happily just a civil law guy. But if you go and watch those courts, how they work, And if you talk to Judge Simmons, you'll see that, yeah, people come in with a crime, but in the 6 months, in the year, in the 2 years, say that they're under the supervision of those diversionary courts and are trying to make a comeback. It's often the civil cases that are the barrier. You know, it's a child support that is built up that needs to be modified, or, you know, some issue, you know, they get depressed because they have no visitation, or, you know, they really need a bankruptcy and a fresh start, where they have horrible credit and collection issues. So, you know, that's kind of, I think, the humility that the MLP teaches you, is that you won't by yourself solve all the problems. But if you work as a team, if civil attorneys, criminal attorneys, judges, doctors, social workers kind of all lean in the same direction and do the thing that they're good at, that's what delivers success. So I would just love to look at what our community does well already, or where strengths lie, and just bring our particular expertise to that as well.
Kirby, before we go and we tell folks how to learn more about medical legal partnerships, I do have to ask. So you kind of have your feet in both pools. You have it in lawyers and with doctors. So I have to ask you, who has the bigger egos, lawyers or doctors?
They are tied, Justin.
But the actual podcast, you should have seen the look on his face.
They are tied, but the actual winner is the educational partner. You know, a doctor, a lawyer, and a PhD walk into a bar. That's how we describe MLP sometimes. each profession has its own ridiculousness, without doubt, but I'm going to give it in a close race to the PhDs that we work with. And I say that with love. I'm air hugging them right now. But
there you go.
Doctors and lawyers have checkmated one another, and we've been passed by the wonderful tenured faculty at Furman and other great institutions like Wofford.
See, it was such a perfect answer, because you kept it. You didn't piss off the lawyers or the doctors, and you just kept going. And it's great for me, because now I can tell my wife, look, this guy's an expert, and he says we're tied. So it's good.
Yeah, it's
there you go.
Something to aspire to. But yeah, they've outdone us with the egos.
Well, Kirby, we thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us about medical legal partnerships. If someone wanted to find out more information about them, where could they go, and what's some good resources for them?
Yeah, you know, listen, in South Carolina, I would be very happy for an interested person to contact me. We have had a lot of interest from other parts of the state. Florence and Anderson and Spartanburg and maybe Greenwood have shown interest already. But also, the National Medical Legal Partnership Center website is really fantastic. They have a brand new executive director, and I would just encourage anyone to Google Medical Legal Partnership. That national website comes up. Actually, what first comes up if you Google MLP is My Little Pony, and that will take you down a totally different direction, Joseph. So
we can have a different podcast about that. Come back on, we'll talk about that.
I might stay away from that podcast, having gone down the brony rabbit hole a little bit online. But no, the National Center is fantastic. You know, that isn't always the case with the National Backup Resource Center, but in the Medical Legal Partnership, they are wonderful and accessible. They have a toolkit, a way to start a medical legal partnership and make sure you get the communication right between all these partners. And they've been fantastic to us. So, yeah, here in South Carolina, I would love to talk to anyone interested. But certainly the National Center is a wonderful resource.
Perfect. Well, thank you again so much. And if you want some information on the partners that have made this medical legal partnership so successful, you can look at the show notes for this episode. We'll have them there, and we will also tag them on Facebook. So if you follow us at SC Law Pod, you can see those organizations and individuals. And of course, if you want to follow us individually, you can follow Dane at SC Crim Lawyer. You can follow my co-host Amber at Red Judicata. And of course, you can follow me at Joseph P. Bias on Twitter. Kirby, thank you so much for joining us. And Amber, always a pleasure.
Always.
Thank you both, Amber and Joseph. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. And we will see you.
Thank you.
On the direct examination part. No, we won't see you next week. We'll see you after Thanksgiving. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And we will see you in December, where we return with another illustrious guest. All right, bye.